This is the 9/11 and other deep state crimes teleconference for the 24th of June 2015. Ken Fruin facilitating, and we'll start with our roll call. Go ahead, Chris.
Okay, I'll read the names I've got. Ken Freeland, Barton Bruce, Ed Delaney, Craig McKee, James Hufford, and Bill Wilkes. Did I get everybody?
Yep, Barton isn't here yet, I think.
No, Barton is here, Phil.
Okay, good for you.
Good to feel it, Bill. Okay, the first item on the agenda is always approval of the minutes. And we do have a request from Paul Zaremka that we correct the minutes to show that he was, in fact, not here during the last teleconference, even though he was reported as being here. So, other than that, are there any amendments to the minutes? Okay. Craig, when you make that correction, would you send me a doc file of that and just list them as minutes, no longer draft minutes, please?
Oh, I've got a question. If you could change my activist status to congressional candidate. To the congressional district of Massachusetts.
I'm sorry, repeat that?
This is Wilt. You could change my activist entry as a description, change it to congressional candidate, 5th CD, Massachusetts.
Wow. Wow, yeah. Absolutely. Good for you. Can I do some absentee voting for you?
It's a write-in candidate. No money involved. So it's a long, long shot.
Oh, yeah. I'll say. Okay. Do we keep my request to Craig? If you would, when you make the correction, send it to me as a doc file, and no longer call draft in 15 minutes, okay?
Yeah, I missed the end of that sentence again, both times, actually.
Right.
The last thing you said, the end of what you said?
The correct version is a doc file. No longer call draft minutes, just minutes, okay?
Minutes. Got it.
They've been approved now. Okay.
This is James Hufford. I have a question. You're not the Bill Weld who was governor of Massachusetts at one time, are you?
No, it's W-I-L-T.
Okay.
That was Weld, W-E-L-D maybe?
Okay,
yeah.
Well, that's what I heard, so, yeah.
He was also William F., and as I am William F., which is pretty funny, but still.
Well, people may, the confusion may get you some votes.
Right. If Kevin's not here yet, I would like, we have to talk about our draft agenda here. To see if we want to make any amendments to it. Are there any amendments to the draft agenda for tonight? Well, hearing none, I'd like to request 10 minutes or so for a couple of housekeeping items that I need some consultation on as it's still here. So maybe we could actually take that up first if nobody objects and give Kevin more time to show up. Hearing no other amendments, then we'll use the draft agenda as written with this proviso of the extra 10 minutes for housekeeping items. The first one is just a simple poll. Does anybody here regularly or even now and then access the audio recording of our conferences?
I do. That's Barton.
Okay, Barton.
I do, Craig.
Especially when I've missed it.
Okay. My question is this. Do people care whether it's in WAV file or MP3 file, or is there a preference for one versus the other? Because I could actually upload it either way. Just wondering.
Waves are longer for the same quality, I suspect.
Actually, in this case, it's not the case, but normally that is the case. But for some reason, in this case, the WAV file is slightly larger than the MP3 file. But it doesn't, I'm sorry, the MP3 file is slightly larger than the WAV file. But that's not an issue. They're both pretty much the same size. I'd be glad to put up either one if there was a preference. Otherwise, I'll just
Can convert from one to the other as necessary, but I probably MP3s are handier if you're going to stick them into something you're going jogging with, but, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Right? You have a position?
I don't think I would be listening to the meeting jogging, personally, but... Sorry.
Well, if you saw my age and my weight, you'd realize I don't jog, but I was just pointing out that putting it into that kind of an appliance.
Right. Well, my age is probably not that different, and I'm just as out of shape, probably. So, it doesn't really matter. That as long as I can save it as easily either way, usually, you know, with this sort of opening or going to it and then right-clicking and saving it as a file onto my computer, that's what I usually like to do.
It's probably fair to assume that most people find MP3s more accessible than WAV files at this point, right?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Okay. I think I'll just start saving this MP3 then. The other housekeeping question is this. Several months ago, we had a guest on who was critical of something that Richard Gage had done and said. I don't know if people remember who that was or what he had to say. But Richard Gage didn't like the fact that he was here and asked to be removed from our mailing list, to have his name removed from our list of invitees. However, he also did want to continue to receive our draft agendas and minutes and so forth. At the time, I just did fine because I didn't want to create any friction with him, but I thought, in retrospect, I really do need guidance on this because everybody else who's on the call is listed on our list of invitees in the draft agenda, and there is an exception to the rule, so to speak, even though we don't have bylaws or anything. So I just thought I would ask if anybody has any problem with letting Richard be part of the silent.
Barton, I don't have any problem, but I would make a couple of comments. I assume you all know that Dave Schlesinger's got nothing to do with AE 911 Truth anymore. And Wayne Costi, who was on the board, no longer is on the board and no longer is doing anything really with them. And Richard Gage doesn't really run the show. There's a very prosperous, prominent, rich California architect who's the first one to speak on some of the videos and not on others, who really runs the board meetings. And so I don't know who's calling what shots or what the ground rules are. The current lady, you know, Kelly David, who's the replaced Tanya there, has been difficult from my point of view, at least, to fix things on, you know, whatever, you know, like your access to this and that things on the website or whatever, or mail access when they've changed something and things don't work anymore. Getting her to do anything may take several calls to Richard. There's things going on behind the scenes there. Why Schlesinger left, he did some rather outrageous threats, which he basically deserved what he got, but his heart's in the right place. And you know, Wayne Costi is, you know, whatever. Just left. I mean, he'd been muscled out of the position he was doing. He was their congressional outreach head of that whole group, and whatever. So, they're just doing their own thing their own way. But there's things going on behind the scenes at AE911 Truth that I don't in any way pretend to understand. But someone like Barbara Honegger is very apt to know. And Wayne's apt to know a lot, too, and he perhaps so would Dave Schlesinger, you know, but Wayne, someone you might prefer to ask of the two. They're both good guys, but whatever.
Okay. What we're concerned about here, though, is just whether people have any problem with Richard being able to receive our business emails without being listed as a recipient, because he would be the only one who is...
there may be some good reason that is political or you know, perception from outside people, or his being listed here might make it more difficult for him to be accepted to the AIA people, or strange things like that, which we don't necessarily sort of see close up. And I think it's harmless. I mean, if he doesn't want to be seen that way, maybe he wants to stay alive longer. I mean, I don't know.
Okay. So, I don't hear anybody making an objection, so I guess we can continue it, but I just wanted to make it. Does anybody else have anything to say on this?
No, I have no objection.
Okay. So we'll just continue with it as it is, that people are aware that he's still receiving it, but he's no longer wanting to be identified as receiving it. Okay, that's all I have.
Would logging this decision in the minutes kind of go counter to what he's asking for? In other words, would
no, start
in
I don't think so. This is a democratic
And the NSA isn't eavesdropping on us anymore, right?
They're making up an exception to the rule.
And in fact, it's not an unreasonable for anything for anybody to say, hey, I would rather not be listed as the, you know, in the big list of people who get it all the time. Although if they show up and are speaking on a conference call, I suspect it's reasonable to expect them to be listed for that particular call.
Well,
is Richard asking to not be listed for a call even if he was attending and speaking?
No, I don't think so. I think the point here is that we say this message is sent to, and then we list the people it's sent to, but Richard Gage is not listed them, but he is receiving it. So I just
how many people are forwarding it to a whole list of their friends on their own other list?
Yeah, it's not a question of this is limited to, although the call-in information really ought not to be given to people who are not invited, I wouldn't think, unless there's a reading. But it's just the assumption is that you know who's receiving this, because that's what it says, you know, and I just want to make clear that in this case there is an exception. There's one exception.
Now, he didn't give an explanation as to why he's preferred not to be on.
No, I think he just objected to our having that guest on, and that he didn't really want to be part, you know, identified with a group that was entertaining criticism of the organization. I think it's politic. I think, you know, whoever made that point earlier was correct. But I think, you know, I just think it needs to be whatever. Whether or not it needs to be in the minutes or not, I think is an open question. I think the important thing is just that people are given a chance to decide on it. It's up to you, Craig, if you want to put it in or not, I think.
I don't mind leaving it out, just that it's such a sort of small thing, but...
Yeah. If
you guys are okay with that.
I would note that for some reason or other, when I came on way back at, although I know lots of people had been on and off over the, you know, quite a while, but when I came on, it was specifically when Hamouk and I were shooting that two-day thing for the Pentagon, the Pentagon conference from the Sheraton and above the Pentagon over across the road there, and Barbara wanted people on her side, I guess, to be on the conference call a lot. So that's when I started actually attending. And for some reason, I've never been listed in the big block of names, and I don't care one way or the other, but just a simple fact, I'm not listed. So, whatever. You may have some procedure when people come on that you add them, and somehow I slip through the cracks. Doesn't particularly matter, but I was sort of amused to note that I wasn't there.
Okay. Well, I think we can leave the matter addressed there. All right. Well, let's go to our second item on the agenda, then, if we're going to sort of comment on this. And that would be talking about the book that we all agree that we wanted to read. How many have read it? How many got a copy?
I read it all yesterday.
I've got a copy, but have not read the whole thing, although I've spot-checked to it, and I'm absolutely impressed by the amount of details and information he's gathered.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and have a discussion on this. Sounds like enough of us have read it that we can at least get started on that discussion. let me create a stack here and, see what we want to go with it. Who would like to make a comment?
Ned.
Ned, who else? Okay, I'll put myself after Ned. Go ahead, Ned.
Well, we had a discussion early on about opening the teleconference to discussion or expanding it to the deep state, and I think this book really draws in the focus of 9/11 through to the teleconference and then incorporating discussion of the deep state and how they kind of all interrelate. And then as I was discussing earlier, an interesting discussion that I recently had with a former police officer that really kind of ties in one aspect of the book, and that is the discussion of the Israelis, dancing Israelis and the van in New York, and alerts that went out nationally, evidently from the FBI and Department of Defense, and indicating that there were more than, they indicated, according to this individual, there were at least five of these vehicles potentially running around the country. Of course, this would potentially have set all the various police forces and whatnot in the country running around trying to figure out what was going on. I don't recall hearing about any such alerts from the media following 9/11. I don't know whether anybody else privy to that sort of thing. It seemed to me that everything was pretty much focused in around New York. But the aspect of the deep state, and when Chris Bowen was on talking about focus on Israel, for instance, Mossad, and I know we were discussing the deep state at that time. We used that terminology, but it certainly seems relevant at this point in time, and brings more of a focus on what some of these people have been trying to say for a number of years.
Okay. Well, I would certainly concur with what Ned has said. I do think, unfortunately, that the introduction is probably the best part of the book. For our purposes, in the sense that we get a lot of really clear-cut, nice and clear, crisp definitions of terms that I think are very useful in our discourse, such as, you know, what is a deep event, what is a deep state, and so forth and so on. I wish he had developed these things a little further as he went, instead of just getting into more into the details of the thing, but I do think he does a great job, like Ned said, of tying up the Kennedy assassination with 9/11 as two sort of watershed events that are intimately linked in some way. I think, though, one of the most interesting parts of the book is his thought on Saudi Arabia as a soft conspiracy theory approach, and I think especially in light of the attention being given today to the 14 pages, I'm sorry, to H.R. 14 with the 28 pages, it's really useful to consider. Hi, who's here?
Hi, this is Kat. I'm sorry I'm late. I fell asleep.
Oh. Hi, Kat. Well, we're just starting to discuss JFK to 9/11, so welcome back.
Okay, I'm about 30% through that book.
Okay. Do you want to be on the stack to speak about it?
I have a bunch of notes of things I could say.
Okay. All right. Ned has already spoken. I'm speaking now, and you're after me, okay?
Okay.
Again, in light of the current emphasis on the 28 pages and the Saudi connection, I think what he had to say about the Saudi thing being a soft conspiracy theory, in other words, basically a fallback position for the neocons, is useful. It's something that we should really be thinking about as a sort of hedge to the many hopes that people have that releasing the 28 pages will somehow open up the can of worms to 9/11, as opposed to providing an alternative deflection of our concerns from Al-Qaeda to Saudi Arabia. So, I think maybe quoting that specifically at some point in discussing that, along with, I should say, because I also happen to be reading this book at the present time as well, I just finished it actually, Crossing the Rubicon by Rupert, he also has something quite similar. So I think, you know, when analysts like this are predicting, basically prophesying, that Saudi Arabia will become the next target and that 9/11 will be used as a way of making them the target, we have to be careful when we're promoting 28 pages of the panacea. That's just my thought on the subject. Okay, go ahead, Jeff.
Okay, so I just want to be clear. This is the book by Laurent Vigneault, is that right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Right. Okay, well, I was kind of disappointed with the book because I don't feel like I'm really learning anything new from it. As I said, I'm like 30% through it. And so right now, it's all about the JFK, I'll leave it fascinated. So I just felt like, why are we reading this? And I'm sticking with it, and maybe it's going to come together more interesting information. But I didn't feel like it was well-suited for our group. Okay.
But is it the same people doing it?
Yeah, let me add, put me on the stack too, Ken, would you?
Mm-hmm.
So I can address that.
Who's speaking?
Bill. Okay, Bill. Are you finished, Ken?
No, but go ahead and address that. I would like to know the answer to that. I can think of books that might...
Oh, okay. So you would like us to
discuss
one question, and then you'd like to continue. Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay, Bill, you wanted to respond to Kat, and then I'll respond to Kat right behind you, and then we'll let Kat continue with her.
Okay, sure. So, for me, the author is introduced, or, you know, given us is trying to pick the highlights and draw not everything completely and all that sort of thing, but he went into more detail than I was aware of, and gives the overarching impression I get is I haven't been thinking sneakily enough, Machiavellian-y enough, to see that, LBJ and the USS Liberty are possibly linked, and that there's a kind of a network like in the mafia, I think they call it made men, so everybody in a group has to kill somebody, so everybody else has got a murder rap, you know, to hold against the person, so now they're all equals. And so it's sort of like that atmosphere engaged with the Bush family, with the CIA, not so much Congress, but in the Mossad, and it's to me, it's kind of eye-opening into the extent that, you know, I can imagine all kinds of great conspiracies, but this was a playing off against subtlety, that there's one thing about you frame somebody, you make them a patsy and make them do terrible things, and then you come after that and kill them, and you've got the distasteful thing done by somebody else, and then you also get have the benefit of, see, I fixed it.
subtleties than I had been operating in. The conclusory chapter. It's pretty amazing. So that's my bit.
Okay. I'm sorry you came in when you did, Kat, because I had just finished saying that I thought that the most salient part of the book was actually the introduction, which I'm sure you've read by now, since you're 30% through. But there we get some very clear definitions of some of the terms that were sort of problematic for us when we were talking about expanding to a more deep state orientation, such as what is the deep state. We have a very clear definition given there. What is a deep event? What is deep history? And those kinds of things are very useful, I think, to have as reference points so that you can, in the future, speak a sort of common discourse and know what we mean when we say deep state. We can sort of have more of an agreed understanding of it. But also, I want to say the value of sorry, I lost my second point there. Anybody else want to go? Anybody else want to respond to Kat's point or just continue? Okay. Well, let's continue then, Kat. If I think about my second point, I'll jump back in with you then.
Okay, so I can continue?
Yeah.
So I have not finished it, so I'm not sure where the conclusions are going. Yes, I did appreciate that intro where we have the spelling out what is the deep state, so that was decent. I studied the Kennedy case quite a bit, and I was disappointed in some of the directions that the author took. For example, he trotted Roger Stone out. Roger Stone is just to not explain how Roger Stone is probably part of the disinformation campaign, especially on the 50th. And then he was trying to say how the fingerprints of Johnson's hitman were found at the school depository. Joan Mellon actually paid for fingerprint analysis and disproved that. Then he trots out Madeline Brown, who claims LBJ said we're going to get the bastard tomorrow or something like that. So there's a lot of stuff that he put in there that was kind of pointing to Johnson. It was like, come on, and not all of his facts were really true. I'm still on the Kennedy assassination part, and I was disappointed by what he chose to look at and some of the mistakes he made. Like, I mean, he talks about the Kennedy's secret society speech. Well, that would have been shown to not be about secret societies per se. It was in reference more to environmentalism. So I just kind of lost, in his lack of focus on the Dulleses, I don't feel too compelled to read that much more. I would not have even continued reading as far as I did. And I feel like he just repeats a lot of what Peter Dale Scott has already said with in the beginning, but it went on and on and on into details that aren't even that well supported. So that's kind of how I feel about the book.
Okay. Anybody else like to be on the stack?
Well, let me inject one quick question. Is there any way of reaching Kevin, or is he just going to come on if he's able and he won't if he won't?
That's that. I sent him an email. That's all I can do.
Okay.
I just sent him an email.
I don't know what's up.
Can I ask a quick question of Kat? Yeah, I can.
Yeah, sure. Then I'll be on the stack behind you, Frank. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. I was very curious about what you said about the JFK the secret society speech. You know, It was said to have, like, a press gathering, wasn't it? Like a press association or something, but it was... I'm intrigued about why you think it was about environmentalism, because it seemed to be really talking about... It seemed to be talking about secret society based on what he was saying. And could you shed any light on that, please?
Okay, I didn't have it at my fingertips. I just remember marking in my notes that I had read with people over and over going to that quote by Kennedy. And maybe the one or two places I've read were wrong, but I'm pretty sure it was James Corbett who I had heard uncovered that really wasn't true. Yes, he uses the word secret society, but he wasn't using it in the whole way of, or as we know, it's the Bilderbergs and the Skull and Bones. I could be wrong about the environmentalism, but he was using it in a way that it has been taken out of context repeatedly by almost everybody. So I could look up where I found somebody actually looking at the entire speech and seeing how it's been decontextualized and used way too much to point to secret societies, and that wasn't the true meaning of that particular speech that people quote.
Okay, this is Ken. I wanted to speak on that point too, because I just today read something on that subject. The presumption usually is that Kennedy was talking about communism, but that is a fairly questionable assumption, and the exposition that I read today says that he was actually speaking about what he had discovered in terms of the way the intelligence network was operating around him. And the way that it was setting up all of these assets and so forth around the world and operating in a nefarious place. I think there's a really good argument to be made for that, and especially when, you know, there's that famous quote about him wanting to break the CIA into 1,000 pieces. Even though I have to be candid about this, I also read something today that sort of disillusioned me, because it talked about how Kennedy, both of the Kennedys, Sir Robert and Jack, were both planning a secret assassination attempt on Castro while they were also legitimately putting out peace feelers to Castro through a a journalist at the time that was friends with both parties anyway. So that was kind of disillusioning. But anyway, I think the question of the meaning of that speech is a bit controversial. I think it's fair to say it probably wasn't about secret societies per se, but what it was actually about, I suppose, it is pretty controversial.
I think it could as easily as not be various Zionist groups, some of whom are, you know, publicly out there, but what's really going on behind the scenes and what they really are is, in fact, quite secret.
I don't think it was a Zionist.
And the Kennedys were trying to get some of the Zionist lobby things registered as foreign lobby groups, which they really, really didn't want to do. And the other thing they were trying to do was get one inspection of the underground nuclear stuff, which had all been, you know, bricked up and temporarily altered underground, so you couldn't see the whole laboratory, and the Israelis weren't going to do that again, and they were not happy with the pressure that was coming from the Kennedys. All of a sudden, all that pressure went away.
Yeah, in fact, Michael Collins Piper, who died about within the last month, wrote a book on the subject called Final Judgment, in which he argues that that was one of the main motives for the assassination of Kennedy, that he was forcing this undesired inspection of the Dodona nuclear operation in Israel.
And making their lobby groups, whether it was an APAC and back then or not, it doesn't matter, but one of the groups was not registered as a foreign lobby group. They were working hard to do that, and that was certainly not welcome at all.
That was Robert Kennedy that was doing it, actually. But
it doesn't matter, but the Kennedy clan was doing it, who was actually doing the most work on it. You kill off the head guy, and then you kill the other one anyway, so what the hell, the problem's gone.
Yeah, well, I think the speech is it's cryptic enough that it could easily be argued that it applied to this or applied to that. Unfortunately, it's not a crystal clear speech in that regard. So people are unfortunately able to interpret it in a number of different ways.
I think the fact that at one point he says about what is it? Something by night rather than armies by day.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what the word is he uses, but it seems like it doesn't make sense that he'd be talking about communism, because obviously armies by day would be part of that perceived threat. So, I mean, just to read the one sentence here, he says the very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society, and we are as a people inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and secret proceedings. So
mm-hmm.
he's not leaving that out. That may not be the full... I agree with what you're saying, Ken, about the apparatus, the intelligence apparatus. But, you know, he did specifically mention secret societies, and I'm sure that he
mm-hmm.
knew what he was doing when he did that.
Yeah.
So,
Good point.
I would get on to look that up where I got that it's been used repeatedly, but it has been taken out of context. I will look that up, and we'll see how valid that point is.
Yeah, and look and consider, I guess, who is giving that opinion, too. They may have their own bias.
Is this Ned?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, in reference to communism, you know, it's my understanding that behind the scenes, Kennedy was working basically with Khrushchev, attempting to build bridges, and rather than trying to be antagonistic, one of the issues that was getting him into trouble, particularly with Joint Chiefs of Staff and military, was the fact that he was attempting to work in tandem on various projects, for instance, space exploration, this sort of thing. But attempting to mend any rift between the two cultures as opposed to actually promoting, you know, a rift. And so, yeah, I don't think that quite fits the argument as far as Kennedy's speech.
Right.
Okay. Well,
how many people have read Unspeakable?
Has anybody? Yeah, I'm sort of partway through it, actually.
It is sort of the definitive work on this, Unspeakable. How many people have read it?
I have. I just can't. I've read it.
Yeah, a good part of it.
After reading that, it's like, why? What does this book have to say in terms of Kennedy that other books haven't already said? I felt like I wasn't learning anything. If anything, I was finding all kinds of little glitches that were just making me nervous.
I'd like to speak to that. I don't think that he's trying to present the Kennedy thing as though he's making any kind of revelation here. I think he's trying to review it for the benefit of people who may not be yet clear on it for whatever, so that he can go on and then make the connection with the deep state and how that ties in with 9/11 and as a deep state, another deep state type operation. He's basically presenting it as a case study rather than as a revelation, I think.
I didn't get the impression that this book was supposed to be a deep analysis of the Kennedy assassination. I think he's hitting main points, attempting to focus on what's going on behind the scenes in reference to the deep state, and that's what he develops as the book progresses.
Yeah. He does the same thing in 9/11 later.
How would that differ from what Peter Dale Scott has done?
Well, you know, this is just another tool. Particularly, you have to consider that over 50% of the nation hasn't read one book on
on 9/11, Kennedy assassination, whatnot. All they know is what comes over Fox News, CNN, and this sort of thing. It's another tool for us to use, particularly to reach out to people that that have no grasp of the events to begin with. And of course, to tie in the concept of the deep state even adds to the complexity of the whole issue. But, you know, I mean, yeah, in one instance, maybe the book's preaching to the choir, but you have to consider that the majority of people out there, the people that we're trying to educate, probably don't have much of a grasp at all. So it's simply another tool for reaching out and educating people that are totally in the dark yet.
Okay, I can accept that. I guess I wasn't aware of the goals of this group reading a book, and so that's my bad. I thought our goals were how we're going to raise our consciousness and learn more, but now I understand that maybe the goals are just finding tools for further outreach with people. And so those are two different goals. Because if it were just what can we get and really just, you know, bite into a meaty book that will that we can discuss, like we did with Rebecca Roth's book. I like that discussion very much. And that's maybe not necessarily the first book that you would give out as a tool. So I guess maybe that it kind of prejudiced me that it was more of our insider group and how we're taking the issues farther. So, okay, as a tool, yep, I can go along with that. I would recommend to people at my level, you don't need to read this because we already know it, but read it to see what kind of tool it is you want to pass on to others.
This is Ken. I think, Kat, that it actually does a little bit of both, okay? I think, yes, it certainly is something that we're looking at is how it can be a tool, but I think it's also seen as a potential bridge builder between some awareness of 9/11 as a problem and some awareness of Kennedy assassination as a problem and how to tie the two together in a conceptual framework. I would agree with you, Kat, that after the introduction, the rest of the book is a bit of a letdown. I was really hoping for more from it myself based on the introduction, which is all I had read at the time I recommended it. The introduction is incredible, okay, by itself. It's worth discussing because it does give us those conceptual tools. It gives us definitions that we can either agree with or not, or criticize, you know, amend, whatever. But some way of including in our vocabulary these terms with a clear understanding, like deep state, deep events, deep history, and so forth. So in that respect, I think the work serves as a step forward for people that haven't thought further than just 9/11 or further than just the Kennedy assassination. And seeing the connection between the two actually sort of, I think, helps galvanize people and to see the part of a bigger problem, but also, a larger movement. At least is what I hope to do in both places. Anybody else, Dennis? Anything related to the book? If not, I'd like to request that we put it on the agenda one more time, and next time I would like to look particularly at the quotes that relate to the Saudi issue for consideration of whether or not we need to have some concern that might be a government position that we want to be aware of and on guard for. And that 28 pages beyond might in some way help further that, even if, certainly not by the attention of the people that are looking at it from the normal trip moving, but if you get my drift, I think it's worth discussing in and of itself. So I would like that to be a subcategory in the next discussion, and then anything else that people would like to bring to the table if there's any further discussion of it next time. Thank you all for picking it up. Go ahead.
This is Barton. I want to just mention NatSummit.org, which was the last year version of it, that was done in the actual APAC week. This year, two of the four original nonprofits that did that one did the IsraeliLobbyUS.org one, but it's all of the same kinds of people speaking. But you're getting a very, very good look at the sort of pervasive control by a whole bunch of their different nonprofit agencies and groups. If it isn't one, it's another, and who they control and who controls what. It is really quite frightening. And when you realize they've got their fingers in everything and they've got their, you know, their claws around the necks of pretty much everybody in Washington, they can do an awful lot with you know, extreme impunity. The other thing is Benjamin Fulford's, I think it was, you know, his weekly thing on Monday, I think it was the first of this month, but in the summary at the end, he's breaking down corporate ownership for all the major corporations, including the Ciscos and the Microsofts and the Apples and the Googles and things like that. And you think someone like a Sergey Brin owns a lot of stock. Well, he does own a lot of stock, but it's Class B, so he has no control of the board, although it's common Class B common stock. But you look at the pot that Vanguard controls, it's vastly larger, and some of the Vanguard control is very overt, and they directly own it. In other cases, you don't see Vanguard's name at all, but the companies that you do see are ones that are totally owned and controlled by Vanguard. So you've got this big monster thing that all seems to go back to Vanguard, and then who's pulling their strings? It could be the Vatican, it could be all kinds of the Rothschild family, or whatever. But anyway, you've got Vanguard showing up there all over the place, and their fingers on everything. They control our media, they control our major corporations, and they control weapons manufacturers, and basically they own most of our elected officials in Washington. And this is a big, big club, and you know, it isn't all Zionist, but it's a significant percentage.
And here's
where
one
Zionist
thing
is not the average Jewish neighbor who's a perfectly decent American guy. This is a relatively small number of obscenely rich people whose only real interests are making more money and screw you, we're going to step on you.
Can I put in another thing that struck me?
One moment, please. Did somebody join the call? Did you get a new caller?
I did. No. This is Les Jameson. Sorry I'm late, folks.
Oh, hi, Les. Okay.
I just wanted to add, one of the things that I had not contemplated was that the Mossad agents in Florida, along with some of the 19 hijackers, quote unquote, it never occurred to me that Mossad would be their minders, if you will, or keeping tabs on them. Now, maybe I've gone too far, and it's a joint effort of the CIA is watching them as well as Mossad, or Mossad is doing it as agents for CIA. But the intertwining of all of these players is really it's just a level of complexity that I hadn't contemplated. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, Kathy,
go ahead,
the 28 pages, considering the amount of time this transpired from the time the events of 9/11 to the present, it seems like the fact that the 28 pages has suddenly surfaced is almost, and then it surfaces at a time when the Saudi government itself is going through an apparent transition. And I read something the other day where the new Saudi government was reaching out to Russia in a way that the former administration had not. And now all of a sudden this 28 pages suddenly shows up like, well, the fingers could start pointing at Saudi Arabia as a pressure point to control the new administration.
Well, that's where I wanted to go next week, because I have similar suspicions, and I would like us, if we could, just to give more people an opportunity to participate in the discussion, to focus on exactly that question of whether or not this is coincidental and what else might be behind it. Again, not casting any aspersions at people in the 9/11 truth movement that are supporting it, but suggesting that the fact that it's being promoted by the congressman
Graham.
You can get into that too. So
yes,
I just
left.
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't think it's a sudden thing that, you know, all of a sudden now it's hitting the news. It's been in and out of the news for all these years. Bob Graham, throughout, you know, this whole period, has been trying to make attempts to get the information released. He's gone on many interviews bringing attention to the 28 pages. He wrote a couple books, and he wrote a novel called Keys of the Kingdom, in which he camouflaged information on the whole scenario. And so this has just kind of been developing all this time. Then you could, Walter Jones, Republican congressman from North Carolina, read Bob Graham's book, and he was intrigued, and then he requested to gain access to the 28 pages. This all took some time, and then finally in 2013, December, he submitted the resolution for the release of 28 pages. So this has been kind of transpiring over a period of years. So just want to...
Yeah, if I may, you're certainly giving the current argument, and that's fine. We haven't really presented yet the alternative viewpoint, and that's what I was hoping we could do next week. That's why I'm asking that we put it on the agenda as a controversial point that we should examine in detail. And I hope you'll be able to join us next month, and that we really have look at this from all sides. Both from the standpoint of what the points that you've been enumerating here and some others that support it, as well as from the standpoint of could this be more than happenstance that right now Saudi Arabia is in the position it's in and so forth and so on, and that there might be a larger plan, having to do with, we can get into that next month, I should say. Okay?
Saudi Arabia is not guiltless, but I think they're just contractors or patsies, and this is really to take the pressure away and divert attention from primarily Israel.
That is what basically Greeno's contention is, I think, that he's predicting that would be the case, and that's why I think we should discuss it in more detail, okay? I think we all have kind of a take on it, or we're all something to bring to the table. I would like to set that up for next
month.
It's
very hard to understand. It sounds muffled. Is this Ken speaking?
Is this way? Can you hear me better now?
Yeah.
A little better. Yeah, all right. That's why we put this on the agenda for next month. Really focus on it as a subject in and of itself. Drawing from Guido, which he is prophesying, and I'll also bring in Rupert's take on it, which is relevant and supportive of where the AI is coming from, but then allowing others to, make contrary points, and just really having a good open debate about the question and try to look at it from all sides, okay?
This is James Hufford. I know that this is kind of ambitious, but I wonder if anybody has tried to contact Michelle Sosadovsky and see if possibly we could get him to come on a call.
Would you volunteer to do that?
Well, I could do it, but I was thinking that Craig might be better since he's in Canada and maybe have some more inside access. I don't know.
I actually did email him because we agreed we were going to approach him a couple of calls ago,
mm-hmm.
and I did email him, and I never got an answer back. And I must say, I didn't really sort of push it or follow up,
sure.
Which I would be happy to do. And sort of, I know he's not always the easiest person to get by email, I guess, because
yeah.
he's so busy or whatever. So
right.
It might take a couple of attempts or two or three attempts, but I don't mind sort of doing that again.
Sure, definitely be worth a shot.
Yeah.
What was the relevance to this point about him, James?
Oh, just that he is, at least for me, he's kind of my main man, my main go-to when it comes to, global affairs and geopolitics.
Okay.
Is there a particular, a particular way that you would like me to describe to him what we would like him to talk about?
Just a general size up of everything, of what's going on in the world, and how discuss some of his research and some of his insights into things, and maybe even reveal some of his sources to us. That would be interesting.
I think asking him for his take on this particular question would be, a very useful way of helping him understand what
Absolutely.
He probably does have a take on it.
I have a comment about him as well. Someone on our 28 pages list just gave a link to his global research site. That he's come out with new information about ISIS, and I think he knows a lot about ISIS. So I would, if you contact him, I would be particularly interested in more of his take on ISIS.
Yeah. Well, ISIS injured are repaired in Israeli hospitals, and if they're still serviceable in the field, they're put back out to fight. So go figure who's running them.
Yeah. Okay, so there's two topics that we've asked that he may address. Craig, if you're able to get a hold of him.
Ken, one totally unrelated but very related and relevant sort of background thing. 30 seconds can do it quickly. Can I do something?
It's regarding
secure, really secure, probably NSA-proof email between random people. ProtonMail. Anybody familiar with ProtonMail? They started, it was CERN and MIT scientists when Skype and things like that were determined to be no longer really trustworthy, especially after Microsoft. And ProtonMail is one of them. They've been in sort of low volume mode and sort of fending off people who want to get on because they were having growing, take the time to build up your things. And now they've sent a thing to people who already had it saying, if you pass this sign-up code, we're going to give you this URL that will get you on right away for new members who want to sign up for it. It's a special mail. You don't use it for all your normal mail, but you use it for stuff you don't want other people seeing. They will get a gigabyte of storage space, whereas other normal new sign-ups will only get 500 megs. And I will send it to you, Ken, and you decide if you want to forward it into how big a list or not at all.
Well,
but
since you made the announcement, why don't we, is it all right with you if we put it in the minutes then and allow all our invitees to
It is a code and things. I will send you the email, and it's got nothing specific from me in it. It's the same one they sent to everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But it's got to be acted on within about a month or so because it has a drop-dead date in it.
All right, we'll send it to Craig, and we'll include that as one of the announcements.
Okay, to Craig, okay.
Yeah.
But it's a very useful tool, and people in our kind of trade sometimes need to use things that presumably other people can't read.
Yeah. Okay.
And there's a lot of stuff online about it. And there's several other services like it, too, but that's a whole other story. Alexandra Bruce has just some stuff about the different ones.
Okay. Does anyone have any more comments about the book before we leave the subject, other than the Saudi issue? Okay. Then we'll close it out for now. Does anybody else have any other announcements? I do.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Les Jameson. Very, very briefly, you all probably know about David Swanson, kind of a high-profile anti-war activist. He is a co-founder of RootsAction.org. It's a big petition site. Also on the board are Jeff Cohen from FAIR and Media Matters.
Okay, cool.
I'm spacing out on the Pentagon Papers, man who we all know. When Cap, help me out with his name.
Norman Solomon is on there too.
Yeah, Norman Solomon. Anyway, these are have all been gatekeepers big time when it comes to 9/11. At the Left Forum in New York in the end of May, I attended a panel given by David Swanson, Jeff Cohen, and others, and they had just mentioned how they get very jazzed up about petitions which are connected with legislation, and they had already hosted a petition on the 28 pages, and I brought that up in the Q&A. I mentioned that, guess what, now the Senate is introducing a bill this coming Tuesday, headed by Rand Paul, also for the release of the 28 pages. Well, David Swanson got very excited, and he volunteered, basically, to lead me through the process of creating a new petition for the Senate bill, et cetera, et cetera. Well, it got launched today. And what I can do, Ken, is I'll send you the URL with a little bit of background here, and if you could forward it to this discussion list. But anyway, I really see it as kind of an interesting breakthrough in that.
Send it to Craig, please. Okay? Craig is the secretary.
Say again?
Send it to Craig McKee. He's the secretary.
Craig McKee.
Send it to me, I'll forward it to him. Don't worry about it. If you don't have his address, just send it to me, I'll forward it. Text him.
All right, very good.
Yeah. All right, so thank you for that. Are there any other announcements? I have an announcement. I did hear from Steve Dayak today. He said he couldn't be here to update us on the 9/11 crash test project, but he also informed me that Pablo is no longer connected with the 9/11 crash project, so I thought people should be informed of that.
Wow.
Yep. He didn't give me any explanation or anything, and Pablo's not here to talk about it, so people should be aware of that. Okay, any other announcements? Thanks to our friends at the HR 14 conference, which is coming up shortly, so they can have a nice long break. We'll go ahead and close out, thanking them for having us a bit later without interruption. So, good night, everyone, and we'll see the last Wednesday next month. Same time, same place. Okay?
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks.
Good night.
Bye.